Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today we have for you a brand new episode just come out from under the 60-day embargo period during which our participating newspapers have exclusive rights. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on November 1st, 2024, under the headline, Jane Barnes was the Old Oregon Territory's first adventuress. Here we go. One of the more interesting things about Oregon history is how much of a role colorful characters played in it. Till a few dozen years ago, historians didn't much like talking about the contributions of prostitutes and swindlers and Shanghaiers and other underworld characters to Oregon's history, preferring to talk about brave pioneers and clean-living homesteaders and noble missionaries and whatnot. So it's no great surprise that the name and identity of the first woman of European extraction to set foot in the Oregon Territory has gone mostly unremarked. Her name was Jane Barnes, and she was, in every sense of the word, an adventuress. That she made it into the historical record at all is a real testament to what an interesting person she must have been. In 1813, Jane Barnes was a young, pretty blonde barmaid working at a tavern in Portsmouth, England. By the end of that year, Jane had gotten into a love affair with a customer, an adventuresome Scottish gentleman named Donald McTavish, who was an employee of the Northwest Company, the British fur trading company that merged into the Hudson's Bay Company a few years later. Donald was something of a VIP. He'd been tapped by the company to take over as chief factor of Fort George, essentially governor of the British Northwest, which basically included the north half of today's Oregon, along with all of Washington and British Columbia. The company had purchased Fort Astoria from the Americans during the War of 1812, and having renamed it Fort George, now needed to build it up into a proper trading fort with all the necessary organization and accoutrement. McTavish was scheduled shortly to leave for the Columbia River to take up his new position. Historian Kenneth Porter writes, with that adorable condescension characteristic of mid-century historians when they write about interesting women, that Donald, quote, without much difficulty, succeeded in adding her to all those comforts of home, including bottled porter, excellent cheese, and prime-tinned English beef, with which he and his fellow proprietor John MacDonald intended to solace their long ocean voyage and subsequent exile in the Indian country of the northwest coast. Porter's assumption is that it was Donald who talked her into traveling with him, but it does seem rather likely that it was the other way around, that having Donald bring her along was her idea. He must have really liked her. Porter's assumption to the contrary, anyone who thinks it was Donald McTavish's plan to go out and find a random barmaid to drag along on a dangerous journey halfway around the world to an outpost in the wilderness, should immediately go to a doctor's office for a head examination, taking great care to stay away from bridge salesmen along the way. In any case, when Donald McTavish crossed the Columbia River Bar on April 17, 1814, she was on board his ship, the Isaac Todd. And a week later, she accompanied him ashore, where he took up his duties as the company's governor of what you might call British Oregon. Jane's romance with Donald McTavish doesn't seem to have lasted very long. McTavish had planned to drag her along on an overland journey to Montreal after he got Fort George properly organized, but she thought it would be a pretty quick job. But she soon made it clear that that journey was more arduous than she was willing to endure. So McTavish arranged for her to travel back to England on the Isaac Todd, which was scheduled to leave on August 1st and would return to Portsmouth after a stop in Canton in China. McTavish thought he'd have everything in place well before that, so he asked an associate, Alexander Henry, to take charge of her and watch out for her after his departure. Mr. Henry, who had a wife and family back in England and seems to have been worried about what all this would look like, agreed to the deal, quote, more as an act of necessity than anything else. Once that deal was struck, McTavish sent Jane ashore to Henry's place and immediately took up with a pretty Chinook maiden, much to Henry's moralistic disgust. All in all, McTavish seems to have been a bit of a hound, and it would be nice to know more about how his colleagues and Jane felt about this behavior. In any case, it didn't last long, because while McTavish and Henry were being rowed back to the Isaac Todd from Fort George on May 22nd, the boat was swamped and both of them drowned. As a result, Jane was considered a widow by the local Chinook Indians, several of whom promptly proposed marriage, In particular, Prince Kasakis, son of Kankamli, presented himself in full state ceremony to propose a marriage with her. When Jane rejected Prince Kasakis' proposal, it caused a diplomatic rift between the tribe and Fort George. The only way to fix it was to get her out of there as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, she was stuck until the Isaac Todd could get underway. And because of various delays, that didn't happen until September. So for 4 months, Jane Barnes was stuck at the fort, unable to leave its walls by herself for fear Kasakis' people would abduct her. During that time, though, Jane seems to have had a good time. For diplomatic reasons, she had to remain single. Anyone she might give her heart to after rejecting that of the Chinook prince would be in serious peril, as would the whole fort, as the tribe would consider it a further insult. Historian Porter suspects the ship's doctor, Richard Swan, constituted himself as her secret cavalier. He accompanied her to most of the social events at which a girl couldn't go stag, but no one knows. And historian Porter seems way too eager to jump to these sorts of conclusions. During the time she was stuck in the fort, she entertained herself as best she could. At one point, she tried to establish a literary salon. But although she was clearly nobody's fool, Jane just didn't have the education to hold up her end of a conversation with English gentlemen. Ross Cox tells of an incident in which she was chatting up a company clerk and made what she thought was a Shakespeare reference that everyone else in the room recognized as a quote from Alexander Pope. Doubtless that was the end of that idea. Finally, the day came when the Isaac Todd set sail for Canton and stood out over the bar westward bound. We can only imagine with what relief, surely not unmixed with regret, the company employees at Fort George watched her go. At Canton, Jane once again landed butter side up. There she met and fell in love with an English gentleman working for the East India Company. This gentleman, who none of my sources mentioned by name, quote, offered her a splendid establishment, as Cox puts it. Naturally, she accepted, and Cox writes in 1832, by which time Jane would have been nearly 40 years old, "The last account I heard of her stated she was then enjoying all the luxuries of Eastern magnificence." But you know how rumors are. Another account says Jane was back in England by 1916 trying to claim a small annuity allegedly promised her by Donald McTavish. In any case, that's the point at which the record goes silent. Either Jane Barnes found her forever home with a man she met in a waterfront Canton bar, or she finished her run battling for a small annuity with a company of tight-fisted Scots who likely blamed her for a good share of the trouble they ran into at Fort George. For what it's worth, I think it's more likely Jane found a congenial mate and disappeared into respectable obscurity in the then-approved manner. Had she remained single, she surely would have made more news, and the men of the late Georgian period cannot have been so unromantic and stodgy as not to find the Jane Barnes style of adventuresome spirit irresistible. But as with almost all stories of quote-unquote misbehaving women of the 1800s, we'll never really know. Key sources in this story included works by Kenneth W. Porter, Ross Cox, and William L. Lang. Okay, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it.
By the way, I just launched a brand new podcast. Well, it's kind of a new permutation of an old podcast that I launched 3 years ago and had to abandon at the height of the COVID pandemic. But it's called the Penny Dreadful Story Hour, and it is a weekly podcast that seeks to basically replicate the experience of a London street urchin when a new story paper came out. We're working our way through Sweeney Todd's story papers first. These, of course, are the story papers that became known as penny dreadfuls because they cost a penny and were, well, dreadful. Dreadfully great, if you ask me. So if you really, you know, can't get enough of the dulcet tones of my raspy vocalizations, why, you can look that up and subscribe to that if you'd like to. And just kind of, we're going to be working our way through Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street, as he was presented in all of his evil glory to the street urchins of London in 1847. The first episode came out last Sunday, and the second episode will be posting 2 days from the date of this recording, on January 12th, 2025. Kind of feels weird to say that 25 thing, doesn't it? I guess we'll all get over it by about the end of February. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra.
Offbeat Oregon History episodes come out once per weekday, usually around 6 a.m. if I'm on the ball, and that it won't be long before the next episode is on your device and ready for you to queue up. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.